Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 82 of Boston's Best, brought to you by Condon Productions. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Kelly Cavan. Kelly is the founder of Grazy. Grazy is where you can order snack and gift boxes to be delivered all over the country to your friends and family. They specialize in meats and cheeses, and they also have vegan options for those that live the vegan lifestyle. Kelly shares with us that she grew up in a small 1,500-person town in New Hampshire. She grew up around animals and watching chickens peck around the yard. After growing up in a small town, she ventured off to Virginia Tech for college and later on ended up with a job offer here in Boston, where she's planted her new roots. Kelly has always had the entrepreneurial bug. When she was 6 years old, she tried selling plants she picked from her family's yard. After working as a hotel executive, Kelly finally took the leap and started her own company in 2019. And in early 2020, Grazy was born. In this episode, we talk in depth about the early challenges she faced starting Grazy, one of which being COVID entered into our lives immediately. But because of COVID, she was forced to only deliver locally and not nationally like she originally planned. It allowed her to hone in on the delivery process and the logistics to handle the shipping aspect. And now she can deliver as far as Hawaii in 2 days. She also tells us about the first 200 box order she received and how that experience allowed her to step back and realize the possible future she had on her hands with Grazy. And be sure to listen to the end as Kelly shares the advice she gives someone looking to start their own business, what she would tell her 18-year-old self, and how she defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoy this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week, we have Kelly Cavan. Kelly is the founder of Grazy. How you doing, Kelly?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you on. Like most people on the podcast, I think I came across you on social media. I just love the concept and what you're doing. So wanted to reach out and I'm glad we're able to finally coordinate calendars after the new year.
Yeah, it's super exciting. New Year's like the perfect time to refresh. Like this podcast is a great way for me to kind of reflect on what we've done. So yeah. I'm excited to chat.
Absolutely. So yeah, before we get into Grazy itself, give us a little background on you. Are you from around here? Are you from around Massachusetts or?
Yeah, so I was originally born in Virginia. I made my way up to New Hampshire with my family and spent the majority of my childhood growing up in a small town called Hancock. Yep. So it's one of those small towns where there's, you know, 1,500 people, everyone knows everyone. I always tell this story that, you know, we had this volunteer fire department and there was literally a bell that would ring in the town and every volunteer firefighter would be able to hear that bell and just get in their cars to go to where. So that's how small the town was. Like everyone was in radius to hear that. So I always tell that story and people are shocked at how small the experience was. So
yeah, that's a pretty small town.
Yeah. It was a great place to grow up though.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you move to Massachusetts or Boston?
So I ended up at Virginia Tech. So part of being in a small town when college rolls around, I was just ready to get out of there. So I hightailed it back to Virginia and ended up at Virginia Tech, where I was one of 30,000 people. That was like culture shock all over.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was just such a moment like that I'm so grateful for that I made that choice to leave and kind of broaden my experiences. I don't know what I'd be doing today if I was still in New Hampshire, but
yeah.
After Virginia Tech, I went up to DC for a while and did some work with a hotel company there and then got a job opportunity to come back to Boston. And within 2 weeks, I was just here again. So I was really like grateful to be back in New England. It was, you know, Boston was always the closest city that we'd go to for fun and shopping. And I'm still close to my family and have that city life. So.
Yeah, that's cool. So was the plan to eventually go to Boston or did it just kind of happen that you got lucky with the job opportunity?
You know, it just kind of popped up. I had a friend who was working up here and they were having an opening and I was like, this is kind of a now or never moment. Let's just do it. Packed up the dog, got in the car and made my way back. So
nice.
It's just one of those moments where you're like, something comes over you and you're like, I'm just going to do it without thinking.
So. Yeah. And what year was that?
Oh my gosh, That was 2014 at that point.
Okay.
So I've been here a while now.
Yeah, definitely. So how long from then until you started Grazy? How long has Grazy been around for?
Grazy actually came about end of 2019. So it's super early on in Grazy's life. And even in 2019, you know, that was when the idea kind of came to fruition, but we had to work on all the branding, the website. So we really launched in 2020, just in time for COVID. So it's kind of poor timing, but worked out in the end, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into Grazy itself a little bit. What exactly is Grazy and what is the services that you provide for people?
Yeah. So Grazy today is a local grazing board. And when I say grazing board, most people think of like a cheese board or a charcuterie board.
Yeah.
So we do local delivery of those. We also have a gifting line that does nationwide delivery. We do a lot of corporate events. So if a company wanted to send, you know, cheese and meat boards for a virtual happy hour, you know, they can send 100 of those out. And that's been a huge part of our business during COVID.
Yeah, I could imagine. So what was that moment that where you decided to start Grazy? Like how did the thought process come to fruition, I guess?
Yeah. So originally when I was thinking about starting Grazy, we thought we were going to be shipping cheese boards. So that was my original idea was, you know, something's arriving at your door, nationwide delivery, you can just open it up and you've got this beautiful spread. And I was like, we've got to figure out how to do this because no one really at the time was shipping these throughout the country. So, you know, I was in my kitchen with like a vacuum sealer, like just over and over trying to make this work and working with packaging companies. And I wasn't getting to the point where I was happy with the product. You know, it was this balance of me wanting to use fresh local ingredients and trying to ship those, which is a logistical nightmare. It's pretty easy to ship, you know, like nuts and crackers and all that stuff. But so many disasters later with COVID going on, I'm like, we just need to get out there in front of some customers. Like, let's just pivot and start this local delivery process.
Okay.
Gather some information, see what people like, and then go from there. Like, we'll figure this out.
Yep.
Grazy just kind of morphed into a local delivery service during COVID, which was a huge hit. People were really craving those local experiences and date nights inside. Yeah. And it just kind of took off from there. So it's interesting. We're kind of coming on the tail end of COVID now, and we can kind of get back to, okay, why did we start Grazy in the first place? And let's kind of like regroup and figure out like the business plan moving forward. So kind of at this like pivotal moment where we're deciding the future path outside of COVID.
Yeah. So it's interesting though, with like the timing, the timing to start a business when COVID hit isn't ideal. However, a lot of people weren't leaving their house, whether they were scared to, or whether initially on you were legit like locked down in your own homes for like March and April of 2020, that people, and I know people to this day that are constantly getting deliveries to their homes because of that. So it was kind of as weird as the timing was to start a business, like it was kind of good synergy conceptually for you to start delivering to people.
It was. Yeah. And I think in retrospect, if I had just started trying to ship nationally, like I wouldn't have had the same amount of information data that I do today. I think I knew going into last year, it was going to be a year of like just staying fluid, navigating through the change, but like it was a test year for us. You know, we really got to like survey our customers, figure out why they're even using us. I'm finance background, so I'm so data driven that I'm like tracking everything that comes in, like our customer service emails, like I'm tracking it just to understand like why are people emailing us, what do they need more of. So I think like now I have all this information and now we can move forward with the future of Grazy, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. Like, so when you were first, like you just started walking around, were you just getting in front of people? How were you doing that? Were you just knocking on people's doors? Were you not like walking into like the financial district and saying like, what, you know, what do corporate companies want?
Yeah. So this was a time when I really got outside my comfort zone. I'm like not the person who is the outgoing sales lady. I was honestly, the first store we got into as a pop-up was just a cold call. I called up the store and I was like, you know, we are aesthetic matches. I love your products. I hadn't even like started like local delivering these boards yet, but I was like, can I come by and bring a board and just see if we can collaborate? So I remember I had one box, like I had been designing the packaging and I had this one box in stock and I made a grazing board in that one box and brought it over to them. And we ended up doing a series of pop-ups, which was really kind of a launching pad because a lot of the local community, this is in Southie at the time, got to see our brand and got to understand us and we hand out cards. So I think there's like no real replacement for just getting in front of people and talking to them. It was so monumental for me, but definitely outside of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
But after that, you know, it became easier to walk into a store and say, hey, we're popping up in this store. Like, we'd love to do something similar here. Yeah. Once I had like a base of stores that I was working with, it became much easier to kind of like grow that throughout the community. So.
Yeah, for sure. I love the boots on the ground philosophy that people do that. So was it just you like knocking on, cold calling and knocking on these doors, or was there any help?
It was just me at first. Yeah. Wow. So when I was going around, it was me. I'd show up with, you know, a certain amount of boxes and sell them at the store, or I'd drop them off for the store. We were working with a wine store and they had us in their fridge and everything. So that was fun. And then I'd kind of go back later and be like, did we sell any? And like information, but it became easier over time. And then I was able to like bring in some additional help to sort of help with the pop-ups.
Okay.
Which was easy on my day.
Yeah, no, for sure. So is it still mainly cheeses and like meats and cheeses?
So our grazing boards, like one thing that we wanted to do differently was, you know, make kind of a lighter option and use a more produce heavy board. I know when I'm at a party or at a work function, I'm not necessarily going for the heavy foods if I'm networking or I'm wandering around. So a lot of our boards are primarily local produce throughout the summer with cheeses. So we've got vegetarian options. We've got vegan options, which was huge. No one else was offering a vegan board, which has proved to be a huge market and a growing market for us. So really just kind of a lighter grazing style board instead of heavy meats, cheeses, which has gone over pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Vegan options are huge these days. I'm not a huge vegan person myself, but I know like having that option is kind of crucial. Like everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people going to my aunt, my couple of my cousins, like her kids, like they swear by it. Like all they do is vegan everything.
And even like those who are lactose intolerant are like so happy when they hear we've got a vegan option because they're like, I can have a cheese board now. This is something I've never been able to experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you started Grazy, right? Like this was the first company you started on your own?
It was. Yeah. So I have always been like a person with a side hustle. So even I always tell these stories, like I get bored super easily. And if I'm just in a standard 9-to-5 role, like I find myself just filling my time with other things, you know? So even when I was, you know, a director of finance managing like a $60 million business, like I was walking dogs for Rover, like after work. I was like, I would go after work and just walk dogs because I was like, this is like, there's a dog nearby. I could make money doing it. And like, it was just something to do after work. And like, that's always been my personality. Like as a child, even I started little, like I remember starting a flower arrangement business when I was 6 or 7 and I put up like a display at the cash store in our town and it died within a day because I knew nothing about flower.
Well, you're 6 or 7. So give yourself a little bit of a break.
It was like stuff from our yard that I just put in our basket. But it was like a cute thing, but I feel like I've always kind of had this motivating, like drive to do something all the time.
Yeah, that's funny. I can relate. Like I'm like, you know, I'm in finance myself. Like this podcast is just something I do for fun on the side. And I'm working 50 hours a week at the day job, I guess you can call it. But this is a few hours a week that just kind of gets me away from that. And my wife's like, do you not have like enough free time? Like she's like, you're always doing something. I'm like, I know. But like, I don't know, like if I get sitting around just doing nothing, like I get bored, like out of my mind. Like we have a 2-month-old that she's starting daycare next month or in a few weeks, I should say. And like the half an hour from when my wife is going to need to leave to work to when I need to drop our daughter off at daycare, I'm like, I was talking to her literally this morning. Like, what am I going to do for the half an hour? She's like, just hang out with her. I'm like, but she's going to be sleeping. Like, what? I need to do something for that half an hour. I can't just sit here for 30 minutes and do nothing.
Step her on and walk for Rover.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. She's like, you're crazy. Like, you always need to be doing. And I do. So I can totally relate.
But it's amazing, like, what a couple hours a day, like, you're establishing this podcast. And then that's similar to Brazy, you know, like, it started as a few hours a day. Like,
right.
This whole concept of, like, these little steps every day can lead to such a big idea or a big concept. Oh, yeah. Like, everyone has an hour or two. Like, why not put it to good use? And if you have an idea, like, spend a couple hours on it every day.
Yep.
And see what grows. Like, there's no harm in that.
No, I totally agree. Like, this is book, I think it's behind me. It's somewhere in my list of books. It's called Atomic Habits. And it says exactly that, like, just little consistent habits, like, eventually just going to snowball and build up over time. And I totally agree. So outside of, like, how else have you marketed yourself? Like, did you hire somebody for the website? Like, do you do social media on your own? Did you hire out for that? Like, did you do it on your own and then hire out? Like, let's talk about that for people who are, like, looking to start businesses and, like, how you approached yours.
This is a really good point. So I think one thing that gets lost when you're trying to start a business is kind of going back to the basics and first just understanding what's your business's mission going to be? What are your values that you're going to stick to? What are those? Like, kind of creating those North Stars for your company. So when I started Brazy, I went through a whole brainstorming session. So I worked with an agency here in Boston to kind of just get this, like, momentum going, even for myself, because I'm not someone who's ever done branding before. I've never created a company. Like, I knew that I needed someone to kind of kickstart that process for me. So they really helped me in brainstorming, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? And what do I want the guiding principles to be for Brazy? So I think that's so important. And that's something that kind of gets skipped, which, for all intents and reasons, like, if you're super busy and kind of bootstrapping something, it's hard to take a step back and say, you know, what is my vision? It sounds like corporate fluff, but it really has proved valuable even when we're pivoting. It's like, let's go back to why we're doing this in the first place and what are those values and how can we stick to them? I got agency help there. So I do think if you can, and I understand a lot of people can't, invest up front in some help to get the branding off the ground.
Yeah.
That was really helpful for me. And just creating, you know, a logo and getting your website looking nice. And that can go so far. Even if you're brand new, just the appearance of a professional website is so important. And just having those values and mission, kind of the whole brand personality figured out, that has proved priceless for us.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, because I'm just always curious how people, when they start their own businesses, like, how much do you take on yourself? Like, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, I don't have the money up front to invest in X. Like, it's like a hard thing to try to balance. So
it's so hard. And a lot of the time, it's just so expensive. So the world of, you know, web design is crazy. So, you know, we worked with a local woman here who specialized in social media. And honestly, just did, like, a photo shoot with her, and just getting a set of professional photos in place for a few $100s was paid off 10 times, you know, over and over again. So I think you need to pick your moments of where you're spending your money and just making sure that you're going to get it back at the end. But I do think it's just so important to understand. I mean, some people are great at branding. I just knew that wasn't my forte and that's where I needed to spend my money.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Absolutely. So you're, what, 2 years into the business now, right? You started in 2019, but really, like, launched in 2020. What was an early success that you celebrated that you knew, like, oh, like, I'm onto something here? And then let's start with that. And then after that, what are some of the early challenges you faced and you experienced as well?
I think when I first felt, I mean, it's so hard as a new business to, like, understand and think of yourself as being successful. I think it's hard for you. It's easier to, like, celebrate the challenges you're facing rather than look at and say, oh, we did something really good. I feel like every day kind of feels like a tumbleweed of issues. I think early on, the first moment I actually felt successful is when we started getting, you know, larger orders. So we had companies actually reaching out to us and saying, hey, we love, like, what you're doing. Would you do this for 100 people? Would you do this for 200 people? And that's very validating when you're okay, you see the boxes shipping out and you're like, wow, we did that. That's awesome. So, I mean, in the early stages, you're just so excited for every order that you're receiving. I remember I had like a little sound that my website would make whenever I made a sale. And it was like, did someone really like, is that my family, my mom? Like, did someone really just order? But yeah. Once we started getting like the larger orders, that's when I first felt successful.
That's cool.
And it was really cool to see the processes you put into place too. Like you kind of create these little processes for yourself, but when you're selling, you know, 5-10 boards, it's not a huge deal. But when you need to scale up and make 200, like that's when everything kind of kicks into high gear.
Yeah.
And I felt pretty good like seeing like, okay, we can actually do this, you know. That's like awesome. I would wake up in the morning, it would be like a 3 a.m. wake up and I'd be like, 200 boxes, let's do this. Not really understanding if I could or not. And then at the end, it's good job. Like we made it through another day. So that was partly the reason like where I felt most successful. I think the early challenges for us were truly the shipping logistics. It's such a beast. And as someone who, I mean, I'm kind of in the ignorance is bliss mode when you're first starting a business and you're like, I don't know anything about this, so we're just going to assume we can do this. And you get halfway in and you're like, this is a nightmare, you know, shipping fruits. And so really working through all of that, like so much of our value now is we've figured out how to ship these things and get things there fresh. And that now we can just go from here. Like this whole year was such a test market for how do we just get things to people cold still so that they can enjoy them? And it fortunately took a lot of failures, but, you know, we've kind of gotten to that sweet spot where we have the information now.
Yeah. And it's like a couple questions I have is one, like when you're shipping like meats and cheese, it's like, obviously it's about presentation. You need the shipping to be done well. So when the people get the gifts that like, it actually looks presentable, because that's a reflection, you know, even that's if it's not your fault, like, yeah, like even if it's not your fault, like that's a reflection on the company. God forbid, like it gets something happens and it doesn't come in looking all nice and pretty.
And that's where, like, I feel like the culmination of my life's work. But I've always worked in hospitality, which is, you know, such a customer service focused industry. And from the time I was 14 and I was working in a cafe up until, you know, recently where I was working for a major hotel company, like my mindset has always been, like, treat your customers right. They're going to return. They're going to keep purchasing. So like, that's where my hospitality brain kicked in, is like when these situations arose, like I knew exactly how to make it right. And I think that's also really helped us continue to grow these relationships with our customers, is we have such a strong foundation in just customer service in general. So
yeah, I mean, customer service is everything. You need to have good customer service. You can have the best product in the world, but if you have terrible customer service, nobody's going to want to work with you. You know, continue.
Exactly. When people ask me what industry I'm in, still, I'm saying, like, we're in the customer service industry. Yeah. You know, we're providing a product, but at the end of the day, it's all customer service and it's all presentation. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So when you go to make a board, are there different sizes? Is it like a standard type of board? Like, so you say you wake up and there's 200 boards to, you know, to be made. Like, what does that look like, I guess?
Yeah. So a lot of times when we do corporate orders, it's more of a boxed situation. So, you know, we've got 200 boxes laid out and, you know, it's a lot of assembling in terms of providing a more of a gift presentation. When we do our local delivered boards, like we've done, so we have certain sizes. We've got small, medium, large. You know, our smalls can feed up to 5 or 10. Our larges are up to 15. We have a kitchen space that we work out of in Stoneham. It's a shared space, kind of an incubator for small businesses. And and those mornings look just crazy. I mean, there's boards all over the place. We've kind of got a process down of how to assemble them, but it's chaos. Every day is chaos.
Controlled chaos.
Controlled chaos. Yes. It's good chaos. You know, I think the moments where you're like, I'm on the right path, or when you're waking up at 3 a.m. and you're not like resenting it. So you're like, I'm kind of excited to do this at 3 a.m. So that's been fun.
Well, that means, you're doing what you love to be doing then. Like you're passionate about it. So, you know, that's a good thing. Where do you get the products from? Are they locally sourced? Like, where do they come in from?
So that was a big thing for us. We wanted to keep it pretty local for the boards. So we work with a lot of distributors here in the local area.
Yeah.
So they'll source cheeses from Vermont and from Maine and Rhode Island. Along the produce line, it's a little tougher. Obviously, in the winter here, we don't have a like constant source of fresh fruits.
Yeah.
But during the summer, I mean, it's just farmers markets and local distributors. So that's the best time for our local boards. And then in the winter, we use the same distributors, but a lot of it's coming from Washington or California at that point. But still, like, making sure we're using organic products and know where it's coming from. I think it's super important to customers now that it's transparent. Each of our boards contains a card that will outline exactly where all of the ingredients are from, where they can get them. So that's been a huge hit, is just like they can see exactly where everything comes from.
Yeah. So you said everything's organic?
Yep. Wow. So all of our produce is organic. And that's kind of what's driven price points too. We kind of entered this market knowing we were going to be a little more expensive, but we were going to provide a quality product.
Yep.
So I'm standing by that. And I think the customers have really responded well to that too.
Yeah. I mean, it is like my wife and I eat almost everything's organic for a while now. Like I've always been into just health and wellness for a long time, and you can really taste the difference with organic food. And it's just thinking about it just as a consumer, like I get it, but it's kind of wild. Like organic means they're not putting pesticides onto this food. It's just literally from the ground, and you're paying extra from them not doing anything to the food. Like anytime you go shopping, like nothing extra is done, and it's going to cost you a little bit more of a premium to get that. Like the concept of it as just a consumer is kind of wild to me. I mean, I get it.
There's so much research that, like, when I started this, I really got into researching, you know, farming practices and even sustainable farm. You can go down such a rabbit hole with this this topic. But just like the horrifying stories about the pesticides used on a lot of our products, and just we just did not want to take on that burden. Yeah. Of feeding that to other people. So
I get it. Like, and you look at the, you compare the two when you shop and you see like the organic price versus the other price. And it's like, it seems like a lot more, but like when you break it down, like I was looking, like I buy organic bananas and my wife's like, they're an extra 20 cents a pound. I'm like, they're 20 cents a pound extra. Like if I get,
how
like,
many bananas are you planning on eating?
Like if I get a thing of like 6 bananas at 3 pounds, like it's going to cost me an extra 60 cents. Like, I got it. Yeah. Like, don't worry. I'll take care of the bananas.
Choices to make in life where it's just worth it to spend a little bit extra.
Especially on health and wellness.
Yeah,
for sure. 100%. So when it comes to shipping and delivering, are you mainly just local or is it more like, are you expanding?
So the funny part about COVID was it kind of forced us into this local delivery model. And that was never really the intention of Grazy in the first place. We wanted to be nationwide from the get-go. In retrospect, it worked out. But I think coming for 2022, we're really taking a step back. And honestly, it's a step back to move forward at this point, just to kind of get back to our roots of what we started this company for. And we're going to provide a lot of foodie experiences that can be shipped nationwide. Like our customers are asking for it. No more stodgy gift baskets for like fruits and meats and cheese. I send them myself and I don't even like them to my family. So really like a more modern foodie experience to them. Yeah. So I think we've all received like the fruit basket and that's just something we want to transform. So that will be exciting. We've got a new site launching.
Nice.
It's going to just be a better user experience. We've seen how people interact with the current site and time for a bit of an upgrade.
That's cool. So when you say, so it's not just local anymore, is it nationwide or?
It's nationwide. Yeah. Just the US right now. Not there's so many. Not going international yet. But throughout the US, you know, over the holidays, we were shipping to all the states. So we've shipped to Hawaii, Alaska, and it's worked out. It's been very cool. Some of those like further distances, I always follow up with after their packages are received to just be like, how'd it go? Like, did it make it there? So.
Yeah, I mean, you're shipping it from Boston to say like Honolulu, like that's not exactly. You want to make sure that it actually got there. There's a lot of things. The further the distance, there's a lot more things that can go wrong.
There's so much that goes into the shipping that like we only do 2 day or less for our food products at this point. So yeah, that it gets there quickly. We don't skimp and try and do ground ever. I mean, it's still all about the presentation and getting it there properly. So
nice. That's awesome. And I guess it's not, it might not be a terrible thing that you were forced to do just local initially, right? Because it kind of got you, it really got you to hone your craft coming, you know, just focusing on the local, you know, towards the East Coast and Massachusetts and just focusing on that and make sure you get the standards and the procedures down for that before expanding. So it's probably not the worst thing.
I 100% agree with that. And looking back, I was crazy to think that I could have shipped, you know, cheese boards across the country immediately. Like that would have been a nightmare. And I think that would have been a brand killer if, you know, they open their gift and it's just this pile of things all jumbled in the mail. So I'm so glad we've kind of been able to spend this year getting out there, meeting customers, delivering boards in Massachusetts, working with stores around here and just kind of figuring out our niche there.
Yeah, that's cool. So you've actually shipped to Hawaii.
We did. We did. Over the holidays, we shipped a cheese box to Hawaii and it made it there and they loved it. So
that's awesome.
After that, I'm like, here we go. Let's do this.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's pretty cool. And so you said a small feeds five people.
Yeah. So our small feeds up to five. Yeah. We say it's appetizer portion. Like I could eat a small probably myself, but if I sat down for a meal, but the way people interact at parties, like
people just like picking. Yeah, got it. Yeah. Okay. What's been the biggest order you've gotten so far to date?
Our biggest order so far for our gifting boxes has been around 300. So that was huge. That was a lot. And that entails bringing in extra people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a whole full court press there. For our fresh boxes, I don't typically take anything over 200 just because it just turns into a nightmare. Like the logistics of having boxes sit out with cheese and temperature control and just even the prep time alone. So we've done 200 of our like local boxes, which was a lot. It's in the summertime. Our kitchen doesn't have air conditioning. So it makes it a logistical nightmare. So I'm really weighing, is it winter? Is it summer? How's the temperature going to be in the kitchen? Yep. Can I open a door and let in cold air? All of that stuff.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting. So how long would like that 200 box process take from start to finish?
For the 200 boxes, it's around 4 hours of prep. So
wow.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty quick. Once you get enough hands in there and you've got like a pretty standardized process. I mean, we're not recreating every box every time. It's, you know, pretty standard in the way that we do it. So it's a lot of just upfront cutting, slicing, and then full court assembly. Everyone takes a row and we go from there. So
Interesting. I would have guessed like a full day. Like I just wow. Okay.
That's what I thought at first. Probably my first large order took me a lot longer.
That's fair though. That's fair. Are there any misconceptions about just the industry itself and what it is you guys do?
I think one of the biggest misconceptions. So when I started this company, I was so worried about the social media side of things. I feel like a lot of companies can kind of fall into this trap of thinking that, you know, your Instagram, your Facebook is everything and your followers are everything. And what I quickly learned is just having a good social strategy, you know, posting for your customers, not worrying about your follower count necessarily, and just focusing on your business. You know, people still care about the core customer service.
Yep.
You know, kind of those old school, like business tactics. It's not necessarily all about the Instagram. You can have a beautiful like Instagram and still not have a lot of customers. So I think I got worried at first because I was so inexperienced on the social side. And you know, there's a lot of people out there doing great things on social media. And it was kind of in my brain that, you know, we needed to have 50,000 followers to really make it. And, you know, once you start seeing them trickle in at a slower pace, you're like, okay, are we going to be okay? And I've learned that they don't really correlate in all honesty. No. So I think that's been refreshing to see that like still these old methods of just, you know, hard work and customer service and kind of these boots on the ground methods are really where it's at. So
yeah, I mean, people relate to that a lot more. If they see you knocking on their door, like they're going to relate to that more. They're going to respond to that versus an email.
Yeah, you know? I got much more of a response. You know, we did the farmer's market here in Boston this past summer. every week. I got so much more out of that.
Oh, yeah.
And handing out cards. And I even put a code on to track ordering from those cards. And I got so much more of a response from that from any, you know, yep. influencer or, you know, social post we've done. So
yeah, I believe it.
It's cool to see.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And like the social media thing too, like, it's funny, like, you know, the podcast is something that I do for fun on the side to help promote local businesses. And like, I'll post something and I'll get like 3,000 views. I'm like, all right, I'm like, nice. And then I'll post one the next day and I'll get like 36. I'm like, what? Like,
is it where it randomly blocks you from the algorithm?
I'm like, I don't understand these out. And it gets me, and I get angry. And like, I get so up to like, why are there not thousands of views every time? And it's like, Mark, like, this is something you do on the side for fun. You promote
it. Step away.
That's what matters. And I'm just like, but it's still like, I always want to be like, do things really well. And it just gets frustrating. Like that just happened this week. I'm like, I don't understand how like two days ago, it was a fantastic post. And like, this one was like, got nothing. Like I just like.
Yeah. Like, sometimes I'll post and you'll get, you know, all these hundreds of likes. And then sometimes you'll post and be like, hours later, you have like 15 people that have like seen. Yeah. It's like
I don't understand. So. Yeah. And it's like, I get why people get caught up in this social media being like this huge thing and it means everything. And it doesn't, like, it really doesn't, you know, but anyway.
Yeah, it's important just to remember like those, like what I call them old school tactics, but just be yourself, work hard at what genuine. You're doing.
Yeah.
Provide good service and you'll make it.
Yeah, I totally agree. So one question I have, which I think I know the answer to this based on what you shared so far, but one question I always ask business owners are like, outside of being physically or mentally incapable of working, do you ever picture yourself 100% just retiring and like sailing off into the sunset?
No.
I didn't think so.
I could see future down the road, you know, leaning more into like heavy passion projects.
Yeah.
I would, you know, run a dog rescue or, you know, I don't know. I'm just naming things, but I always see myself having my hands in something.
Yeah, same.
Like, I really can't be that person to slow down.
No,
I'll probably be back to walking dogs on Rover when I'm
you got to keep yourself busy. Even if like financially you don't need the money anymore, you got to keep yourself busy or else you're just going to drive yourself crazy sitting at home 100%. All day.
And I honestly think like every little job or every little thing you do, like these experiences all build up to something. And I feel like that's like even walking dogs on Rover, like has provided me such insight into like consumer behaviors and kind of the user-friendly apps and all these things like I use today. So I think no job is too small. Like just keep yourself busy and it'll all make sense and it'll all work out.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Outside of working, what are some of the hobbies that you do enjoy doing?
Yeah, so I've talked about the whole time, but I'm a huge dog lover.
Yeah, like clearly.
I've grown up with animals. Like I grew up with chickens at our house. I've had dogs. I've had cats. I'm like a lover of all creatures. Like I would take in every animal I find if I could. Like our building limits the number of dogs we can have. So I've hit the limit, 2 dogs. You know, we've recently bought a place and the first thing I think of is like, I can get another dog now. So it's just like, it's in me to be with animals. And I've always worked, I've done a lot of volunteer work in the past with dog rescues and I'd love to get back to that more. Nice.
That's cool.
Currently I feel like I don't have a lot of time for my hobbies, which it weighs on me at times, but I do try and just get outside. Like I grew up being outside and I think even just kind of like wandering around the city on my lunch break, or it's just like kind of getting back to those little things is your mental health. So
yeah, I'm totally with you. Like my big thing for 2022 is doing those little things. Like I can blame it on the newborn, but like the last couple months of the year, like I did not go to the gym like at all. You know, didn't even go for walks like outside the neighborhood. It's like doing these little things that I always did. I was like, I gotta do that. Like I gotta take time and do that. And just do that for yourself, because it's incredibly important to do that type of stuff for yourself. You're just walking around the neighborhood. Like my dog turns around after like a 5-10 minute walk and just isn't into it. I'll bring him back inside. I'll do like a full another loop around the neighborhood for 15 minutes just for myself. Like I'll just put the phone away and just like walk and just get some fresh air. Like even just little things like that is like monumental, mentally.
I think it all comes back to like, I know like currently people are talking about mental health more, but
yeah,
you know, it's, with people who are starting businesses, you know, there's this kind of glamorized view of the hustle and nothing matters except work. And I think it's really cool that like small businesses and even large businesses are saying, you know, you can still have great mental health and take these breaks with
a hustle.
Like you can still hustle hard and take these little moments. To work on yourself. So that's always important.
Yeah. Like you need that balance. Like you need that work-life balance more than anything nowadays. Cause you can just get so caught up in just scrolling on your phone. The next thing you know, you scrolled through Instagram for 15 minutes. And it's like, I could have just walked around the neighborhood for 15 minutes. Like I got nothing out of scrolling on Instagram.
100%.
Nothing but possible entertainments and, you know, memes and stuff like that. But it's just,
I've set like the timer on my phone. Honestly, it reminds me when I've been on social media, and that's just like a mental note to myself to be like, okay,
I gotta do that.
Spend 45 minutes on social media. You gotta go. Just go do something.
Like do something useful. Like I gotta do that. I know my buddy did that to his daughter who's in high school. And he's like, he gave her like, I think it was like 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it was. And she like lost her mind. He's like, she's been up for 6 minutes and like five of it was spent on social media and she was done for the day. She lost her mind.
Talking how fast time passes while you're scrolling.
Yeah.
It's like scary.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious when he told me that, though. So last few questions, Kelly, that I asked every guest on Boston's Best. First one would be, what would be the first piece of advice you would give someone who's looking to start their own business? It doesn't have to be, you know, crazy, you know, meat and cheese boards, but any business.
I think at the risk of sounding cliche or like Nike, like just do it. Like, I think what I say about these little steps every day is something I just live by. And I think anyone can follow their dream and really make it a reality. And I think that's what's so cool about life is, you know, you are so in control of this, whether you feel like it or not. Just getting up and scheduling, blocking your time to work on something outside of your daily life, like that's just on you. And whether there's money or not, like there's always something you can do to work towards it. So I say just start doing little things that would kind of get you there, you know, whether it's calling up someone who does something similar to what you want to do or visiting a business and talking to the owner about how you can kind of get involved, you know, just put yourself and surround yourself with people like who you'd like to aspire to be. And I think the universe kind of makes it happen for you at that
point. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I love that answer. If you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell her?
Probably just be 18. I was always a planner of life. And honestly, the plans that I was making when I was 18 are nowhere near what I'm doing today. Like when you think about like what you thought you were going to be doing back when you were 18, so much growth happens in your 20s. So I think, you know, don't rush things. Like life moves so quickly when you're older. It feels like every day is passing so fast. And I wish I could go back and be like, just being an 18-year-old at time, you know, instead of trying to rush things. So I think I would say, slow down. Don't worry about things. Like your life is going to be fine. And, you know, just be a kid at that point.
No, I think it's so true. Like 18, like you have all these worries in the world. Like you just graduated high school. Like you feel like you're like this old person now. And it's like, I look back, like I'm 37, I'll be 38 soon. And it's just like, I was an idiot. Like when I was 18, like I was such a kid. Like it was 20 years ago. Like the amount of this changed.
There's no way you can not be an idiot when you're 18. So you don't know yet. So just embrace it. Be the idiot you are and like just get as many experiences as you can, you know, like do the travel abroad, do the, you know, extra trips to like a mission trip. If you want to do those things, because it's all going to just add to your adulthood.
100%. I totally agree. Yeah. Kelly, last question that I ask every guest on Boston's Best is, everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how do you define success?
That's a great question. And I love like listening to your episodes for this response from others, because it's so cool how it varies. But I would say success for me. So I've always wanted to just be self-reliant and be able to say, you know, at the end of the day, like, my life is my life. And if anything were to go wrong in life, like I've still got such a great thing going. So I think at the end of the day, it's just, you know, not necessarily relying on others for my own success and kind of forging my own path. So every day feeling like you're in control of that situation. And then just, you know, quality time with my loved ones, I think so important, just that family bond, and also being able to like give back to my family, you know, parents who worked so hard while I was growing up. I love this idea that, you know, now I've got something and a nest egg that I can be able to help them as well. So
no, that's awesome. I can relate to that last piece too. I've been doing that a lot the last year or two. So
yeah, awesome. It feels good when you can just kind of like help your parents out. And yeah. I mean, they gave so much for you. So
exactly. Love it. Kelly, thank you very much for coming on Boston's Best to chat about Grazie. Really appreciate the time and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks for the platform.
Absolutely.
Hey everyone, I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.